just beyond her reach, and then, oh, how was it that she'd never experienced anything like this before? The hawk flung her to the starlit heavens and spun her out between the planets, slid her down the Milky Way and through a star going supernova, rocked her universe from end to end of its solar system, and when he finally, gently, let her come back down, she shuddered beneath him with agony and ecstasy, knowing she would never be the same. Something had woken up inside her and blinked pale eyes, unaccustomed to the blinding brightness and stunning intensity of this new world. She lay, panting and a little bit frightened, but ready. Ready to truly and completely give herself to her husband and make their marriage soar as she knew it could. Ready to try to begin to tell him the things she felt for him. How much she really admired his sensitivity and compassion. How much she adored his strength and fearlessness. How much she even cherished his brash and passionate rages. How glad she was to be his wife.
Hawk! Ari! Ari!
No, I don't... His face was fierce and wild, and she reached for him. But she missed, because the hawk stiffened with a roar of agony and leapt from the bed, leapt from her, and practically ran from the room without looking back. The room fell silent, except for the click of a lock. Adrian stared in total confusion at the door. This was like being bedded in roses and waking up in the mud. How could he just up and leave her after that? Chapter 26. Shehawk James Lyon Douglas does not shake, he reminded himself. Does not lose control. Does not almost start mooning about like some lovesick boy just because he gives a lass the orgasm of her life. He hadn't missed that. But it wasn't the orgasm. Not even the way she'd shuddered against him, or how beautiful she'd looked as she'd panted, love-slicked beneath his tongue. It was that he'd been about to do something he'd never done in all his life. Lose his seed outside of a lass. That and more. It was that he loved her and she still hadn't said his name. Not even in the apex of her passion had she cried his name. Nothing. For all he knew, she could have been thinking of Adam. It was part of why he'd had to pull the damned hood off her. The hood had seemed a good idea at the start, but it just had to go. The next time he loved her, he'd have her eyes open and seeing him from start to finish. And finish it he would. His throbbing shaft would not be able to handle that torture again. But he didn't want to give her his seed until he knew she belonged to him. Didn't want the possibility of not knowing whose child she might bear. And then he recalled the flask that the old Rome had given him. He considered it thoughtfully, wondering if now was the time to use the potion it contained. He may as well, he mused, although he hated the side effects. The way it would leave him cold and remote in the middle of the greatest passion he'd ever known. The next time he came to her was in silence, from beginning to end. A scarce quarter of an hour before, he'd grimaced as he'd pulled the stopper out with his teeth. He had sworn never to take the potion again, but this time it was necessary. He had to make her want him, to bind her to him with desire so he could start working on making her love him. And he needed a clear head to do it. Last night he'd almost made a fool of himself. He'd certainly lost control, come close to spilling on her with both body and heart. Foolish words of love and seed and hope for babies and a lifetime together. So he tossed his head back and swallowed the bottle's bitter contents, and waited. When he could feel its eerie fingers unfurling through his body, only then did he go to her. He stripped her bare and guided her to the floor. She made no move to stop him. She remained mute, with an unfathomable expression in her eyes. It was mute fascination, but he didn't know that. Her eyes lovingly wandered over every inch of his body when he looked anywhere besides her face. She marveled at the sensation of cool floor to her back and hot man to her front. But he seemed somehow different this time, as with his hands and mouth he brought her to that shining place in the sky not once, but a half dozen times, perfectly skilled, almost frighteningly controlled, while she lay aching beneath him. She didn't like it one bit. When he turned away from her, she felt somehow cheated, as if he hadn't really been there with her at all. So what if he pleasured her well? She wanted the same sun glowing in his eyes, the same uncontrollable wild passion that burned white hot between them.
Hawk!
She called to his back. He stiffened and paused a long moment. Muscles bunched in his shoulders and back. He seemed so untouchable.
Oh, never mind,
she said softly, her eyes luminous and brimming with hurt. Hours later, the hawk rinsed his mouth for the fifth time and spat into a basin. Well, that had been a disaster of epic proportions. It had hurt him more than it had helped him. The potion had kept up his enormous erection and not allowed him to spill anything. Was there such a thing as a fire that froze? He would never take that potion again, not with his wife. When he'd finally gotten the foul taste of it out of his mouth, he dressed and headed for the village gathering hall to hear more cases, more decisions and more people with needs he must see to. And all the while, he knew he'd be wondering if he, who ruled numerous manors, villages, keeps and men, was ever going to be able to simply make his own wife say his name. Shahak. That's all he wanted. Adrian paced the room restlessly. What had happened this afternoon? She felt dirty, as if she'd been touched too intimately by a stranger, not been made love to by her husband. Not like the night before when she'd seen that look in his eyes, that warmth and tenderness along with the epic desire. He'd been detached somehow this afternoon. When he'd returned to their room to dress before he'd left again, he'd still been eerily distant. Had he done something? Taken some drug to make him... Those flasks she'd seen, lying in a leather pouch on the bed table last night. Her jaw jutted as she stomped to the bed table. Not there. Where had he put them? Her eyes flew to the clothes he'd dropped in the chair when he'd changed this afternoon. Rummaging through the pile, she found what she sought and dumped the little leather pouch. One empty, a full one left. Ha! That and the healing poultice he'd been using when he changed the bandage on his hand. An empty flask. Well, two could play that game, and he'd rue the day he left the other one just lying about. Wait until he saw just how cold she could be. When the hawk returned to the manor that night, he was unequivocally convinced he must have gone to the wrong house. His wife was waiting for him in the locked bedroom, completely nude, with a wild look in her eyes that made him quite certain he was dreaming, or lost, or mad.
Hawk,
she purred as she glided to him. Adrian? He asked warily. His wife was so damned beautiful, and for an instant he didn't care why she was acting this way. He was sick of the waiting and tired of the wanting, so he swung her up into his arms and kissed her, his hot mouth moving over hers hungrily. Then he saw the flask lying on the floor by the bed, looking as if it had been dropped shortly after consumption. Hawk blew out a breath of frustration and allowed himself one more longing look at his wife's flushed cheeks, her magnificent breasts, and curves that went on forever. One glance at her darkly dilated eyes and her pouty mouth, plum ripe and begging to be kissed.
"Lass, did you take that portion?" he asked wearily.
"Mm-hmm,"
she drawled as she reached for his lips hungrily. He dumped her on the bed with a thump, the aphrodisiac. He figured it should last about 12 hours before he could be certain she was back to her normal, shrewish self. It would serve her right for him to just take her right now, honor be damned, he thought darkly. Unfortunately, there were no circumstances under which honor could be damned, not even when his throbbing shaft was making him wonder how the hell honor had anything to do with tupping his own wife. Oh, she would surely want to kill him the next time she saw him. He locked the door and stationed 4 guards outside it, telling them he'd kill any one of them who went in that room for any reason during the next 12 hours. Then the legendary hawk sat down on the stairs to wait it out. The next time he came to her, she was indeed furious.
"What was in that flask?"
she raged. Hawk couldn't help but smile. He tried to duck his head before she saw it, but failed.
"Oh, you think it's funny, do you? I'll have you know that you left me in here for a whole night, thinking, oh my God, you have no idea how much I needed!"
"Not me, lass." His eyes were dark. "It was not me you needed. You took a bit of an aphrodisiac, the Rome brew. I had no intention of giving it to you or using it myself. I didn't even ask them for it. And you snooped.
You took a potion to make yourself cold to me,"
she shouted.
You hurt me!
Hawk stared. Hurt you? Never. I would not hurt you, lass.
Well, you did.
Her eyes were wide and luminous, and her lip trembled. He was at her side in an instant.
How did I hurt you? Only tell me, and I will make it up to you.
You were cold. You touched me, and it was like you were a stranger.
Hawk's heart sang. Desire coursed through him in hot waves. She liked his touch.
You like my touch?
He breathed before stealing a kiss from her pouty lips.
Not when you do it like you did yesterday.
There was a furrow of consternation between her lovely brows, and he kissed it away.
Besides, being that you wanted to bed me, why didn't you just take advantage of it when I was so willing?
She sighed as he traced soft kisses across her eyelids and her lashes fluttered closed. His lips were warm and infinitely tender as he kissed the tip of her nose, then not quite so tender when he claimed her mouth with his.
When I love you, 'twill not be because some drug has intoxicated you, but because you are intoxicated with me, as surely as I am bewitched by you.
Oh!
She breathed as he unbound her hair and let it tumble free down her shoulders.
Why did you bind it?
He combed his fingers through her heavy mane.
That potion was terrible. Even my own hair rubbing against my skin was too much to bear.
'Tis too much for me to bear, this mane of yours,
Hawk said, playing it gently through his fingers. His eyes turned hooded, darkly heavy with sensual promise.
You have no idea how often I imagine the feel of the silvery gold fire spread across my shaft, lass.
Desire enveloped Adrian as she pondered the image his words conjured. He backed her slowly toward the bed, encouraged by the haze of desire in her wide eyes.
The thought interests you, lass,
he purred smugly. She swallowed hard.
You have only to tell me. Whisper to me what pleases you. I will give you it all.
She gathered her courage.
Then kiss me, husband. Kiss me here. And here. Oh!
He obeyed so quickly. His lips were hot, silky, and demanding.
And here.
She lost her voice completely when he slid her gown from her body and tumbled her to the bed beneath him.
I want to pull the drapes around this bed and keep you in here for a year,
he mumbled against the smooth skin of her breast.
It's all right with me,
she mumbled in response.
Aren't you supposed to be fighting me, lass?
Hawk drew back and studied her intently.
Yes, do go on,
he encouraged. He knew his eyes must be dancing with joy. He knew he must have an absolutely absurd expression on his face right now. Was it possible? The taming had begun and was working?
Just touch me,
she wrinkled her brow.
Don't ask me so many questions about it.
He rumbled with soft laughter and promise of infinite passion.
Oh, I'll touch you, lass.
Too deep. You're in too far.
I don't know what you mean.
I've given it thought, fool. We must end this. Queen Avile is on to us. Even your time by her side has not allayed her suspicions. I, for one, do not wish to suffer the consequences of her wrath. The woman is simply going to have to return to her time.
King Finvera waved his hand. And the hawk collapsed onto the bed. Stunned, he looked around the empty room. Adrian fell to the floor of her modern kitchen with a thud.
Did you see what I saw?
King Finvera gasped. Adam was stunned.
She was nude. He was panting. She was...
Oh, shit.
The king nodded emphatically as they both gestured.
She stays.
It was one of the golden rules. Some things could never be interrupted.
You really are from the future, aren't you?
Hawk whispered hoarsely, when Adrian reappeared scant moments later, a few feet away from him on the bed. While Adrian had been drinking in his study, Lydia had told him of the disappearance in the garden. The hawk had tried to convince himself that Lydia was mistaken, but his guards had confirmed that they'd watched his wife disappear and reappear several times in quick succession.
So,
she could still return to her own time, even without the chess piece. The Black Queen is not what she seems. The seer had spoken true. Adrian nodded, still dazed by her abrupt transfer through time.
And I can't control it. I don't know when it's going to happen again.
Her fingers flexed convulsively on the woolen coverlet, as if a tight grip might prevent her from being taken again.
By the saints, he breathed slowly. The future. Another time. A time which hasn't happened yet.
They stared at each other, dumbstruck, for a prolonged moment. His raven eyes were deep with shadows, the beautiful golden flecks extinguished completely. Suddenly, Adrian realized all too clearly that she never wanted to go back to the 20th century. She didn't want to be without him for the rest of her life. Desperation curled cold fingers around her heart. It was already too late. How she loved him. The abruptness with which she had been reminded that she had no control over how much longer she could stay. The knowledge that she might be shuttled back, never to return. The fact that she had no idea how or if she could ever come again by herself terrified her. To be consigned, no, condemned, back to that cold and empty 20th century world, knowing that the man she would love for eternity had died almost 500 years before she'd even been born. Oh, dear God, anything but that. Awestruck by her realizations, she gazed at him, her lips parted, openly vulnerable. Hawk sensed the change in her. Some kind of wordless admission had just occurred in the part of Adrian he'd been trying to reach for so long. She was gazing at him with the same unfettered expression he'd seen that night on the cliffs of Dalkeith, when she'd wished on a star. It was all Hawk needed to see. He was on her in an instant. His awareness that she could be ripped from him at any moment made time infinitely precious. The present was all they had, and there were no guarantees for tomorrow. He claimed her body, raining down upon her a storm of unleashed passion. He kissed and tasted, desperate with fear that any instant her lips might be torn from his. Adrian kissed him back with complete abandon. Heat flared between them as it should have, as it would have from the very beginning had she permitted herself to dare to believe such passion, such love, was possible. Falling back on the bed, she melted beneath him. She wrapped her arms around his neck and pulled his hungry head closer.
Love me. Oh, love me, she whispered.
Always, he promised into her wide-open eyes. He cupped her breasts and lavished them with kisses, savoring how wildly she responded to him. This time was different. She was really seeing him, Shahak, not some other man she'd had before, and hope exploded in his heart. Was she coming to crave him as he did her? Could it be his wife was developing a hunger for him that matched his own appetite?
Oh, please.
Her head arched back against the pillows.
Please,
she breathed.
Do you want me, Adrian?
Yes, with every ounce of my body.
And soul, she was going to add, but he claimed her mouth with deep, hot kisses. She wanted him, eyes open and seeing him. He could tell, this time it was real. When her hand closed around his engorged phallus, a groan ripped from his throat.
I saw you,
you know, she whispered, her eyes dilated and dark with passion.
In the Green Lady's room. You were lying flat on your back.
He stared at her in mute fascination, the muscles in his neck working furiously as he struggled to say something intelligible, anything, but only a husky purr came out as her hand tightened on him. So she had watched him, too? As he had spied on her every chance he got?
You were lying there in your sleep, like some Viking god. And that's the first time I saw this.
She squeezed her hand gently for emphasis. He growled. Emboldened by his response, Adrian pushed him back and scattered kisses across his sculpted chest. She ran her hungry tongue down over his abdomen, tasting each defined ripple in turn. She explored his powerful thighs and throbbing manhood, pausing to drop a tantalizing kiss on the velvety pink tip of the shaft a stallion would have envied.
"Did you find it passing fair?" he croaked. "What you saw then? And see now?"
"Hmm."
She pretended to ponder his question, then licked a long velvety stroke up his shaft from base to tip.
"It'll do in a pinch."
He tossed his dark head back with a smile and roared, "A pinch! A pinch! I'll show you!" His words trailed off as he pulled her roughly into his embrace. His mouth claimed hers, and he rolled her onto her back. Too late to pull back or worry about seed or children, far beyond rational thought of any kind, and adrift in a musky madness named Adrienne, the siren witch who owned him, he slid between her legs and positioned himself above her. Just before he ceded to her beckoning heat, he said, "I have always loved you, lass," quietly and regally. Tears shimmered in her eyes and rolled down her cheeks. He touched a glistening drop with his finger, and marveled for a moment at how good it felt to have her accept him at last. Then, past waiting, he plunged into her. More tears misted her eyes at the sudden pain. Above her, barely in her, the hawk clenched his jaw and froze. He stared down at her a speechless moment, stunned and awed.
"Please," she urged, "don't stop now. Please, I want this."
"Adrienne," he breathed, his face dark. "Virgin," he muttered dumbly.
Ebony eyes held her gaze a breathless moment as his body lay rigid atop hers. Then she felt an involuntary jerk rage through him, and he pushed past the barrier, ripping into her with barbaric intensity.
"Mine," he swore roughly, his black eyes flashing. "Only mine. First, best, and last."
His beautiful head arched back, and she buried her hands deep in his hair. Again she felt that involuntary shudder that rocked him from head to toe. There was momentary pain, but waves of heat quickly replaced it, and the stars called her name, beckoning her to come fly. This time it was even more intense, calling from deep inside her where his hot shaft filled her all the way. An instinctive voice told her how to move, how to gain her pleasure and assure his in the same breath.
"Don't move," he gritted against her ear,
struggling to not spill the moment her sleek tightness encased him. He was beyond aroused, driven nearly insane by passion, coupled with the knowledge that the smithy had never been where he was now. Not even the legendary Everhard, whoever he was. He was her first man, her first and only lover.
"I can't help it. Feels too, oh, delicious."
Her hands caressed his back, then her nails lightly scored the bronzed skin of his shoulders as he rocked her slowly beneath him.
"Stop moving, lass."
"I thought I was supposed to move, too,"
she mumbled very nearly incoherently.
"Please."
"Be still. I would teach you slow first. Then the next time will be for the wild, rough love."
"Wild, rough love now?"
she demanded quite clearly, and it broke the tether that had been holding him so tautly in check. He raised her legs and drove into her, pushing the worry of her virgin sensitivity from what little of his mind remained. He came into her the way he'd wanted to from the very first moment he'd seen her, rough and claiming, hard and demanding with possession, hungry and almost brutal, branding her his. Adrienne spiraled beneath him, the tips of her fingers trailing against the stars as she fragmented into a thousand shimmering pinpoints. She felt him stiffen, then pulse heavily inside her. They exploded together in perfect rhythm, perfect harmony. Hawk lay breathing harshly atop her for a long time, while she contentedly petted her husband. His silky hair had come free from its thong. She traced the soft skin of his solid, muscled back.
"Beautiful man," she mused,
and the thought no longer carried any taint of fear. She stroked his hair in silence, marveling at her life and how rich it was with him in it. It was in silence that at last he raised himself from her and went to stand by the window, staring out into the night of Ooster.
"Ach, lass, what have I done?" he whispered to the glass pane.
Silence from behind him. Adrienne's eyes moved lovingly over every inch of her man.
"I judged thee inconstant and shrewish. I judged thee, sweet falcon, to be the worst of faithless vipers. My dark imaginings feathering in my heart with spiky wing, and I could not have been more wrong."
Still silence. He didn't know that behind him his wife had a tender smile curving her lips.
"Lass from future's distant shore, You were dumped into a man's lap, wed to me sight unseen, and have lived through hells of your own before ever coming to me. I have only given you one more hell to add to it, full of my... Ach, wife, what have I done? Oh, God, what have I done to you?
You loved me.
It wasn't a question, but he answered it readily. I do. More than life. My heart. I didn't just pick a sweet turn of phrase to name you, but spoke from my soul when I named you thus. Without my heart, I couldn't live, and I couldn't breathe without you.
Are you a man who has more than one heart?
Nay, only this one. But it's bitter and dark now from the pain I've brought you. He stared out the window into the bottomless night. Virgin blood on his shaft. Virgin tears on his hands. Virgin wife who'd never lain with Adam, and in all her years, with no man. A trembling gift she'd had to give, and he'd forced it from her with his own dark passion.
Shock.
The word was a steamy caress from her lips. It must have been a figment of his imagination. Hawk thought he would suffer his life long the torture of waiting in vain for a word he knew he would never hear tumble forth from her lips. I have so abused you, my heart. I will atone. I swear to you, I will find a way.
Shahak!
He felt her hands on his sides, her arms slipping around him from behind. She couldn't keep the truth from him any longer. She had to tell him, had to have whatever time the fickle gods would allow them to enjoy. She rested her cheek lovingly against his back, and felt a shudder steal through his powerful frame.
Do I dream a twisted dream?
He whispered hoarsely.
I love you, Shahak.
He whirled about to face her, his eyes dark and shuttered.
Look at me and say that! He thundered.
Adrian cupped his darkly beautiful face in her hands.
I love you, Shahak, flesh and blood husband. 'Tis the only reason I was ever able to hate you so well.
A shout of joy burst from his lips, but his eyes were still disbelieving.
I've loved you since that night by the sea, and hated you harder for every minute of it.
But the king's whore.
Say no more. I'm a selfish woman. Adrian's husband is who you are now, no one else. But I thank the good king for so perfecting your skills,
she teased saucily. Some things were better left to heal, unpicked at, and it didn't threaten her any more, because she understood that it was the noble, chivalrous part in him that had forced him to do whatever he'd had to do to protect those he loved. Although neither he nor Lydia had told her much, she'd been able to figure out a few things for herself. He laughed at her audacity, then sobered quickly.
I must wed you again. I want the vows, between us, not some proxy.
Was it magic that had tossed her through time? When she disappeared right out of his arms, he'd finally accepted it, that his wife had come to him from time's distant shores, and what could that be except magic? A magic he could not control. But what if they could make some wee magic of their own? There were legends that wedding vows taken within the circle of the Samhain fires on that powerful eve before the Feast of the Blessed Dead were binding beyond human understanding. What if they made their wedding vows, pledged before the mystical Rome, on such a sacred night? Could he bind his wife to him across any boundaries of time? He would try anything.
Aye,
she breathed with delight.
Make it so.
I'm only sorry I missed it to begin with, and had I known that it was you waiting for me at the Comyn Keep, I would have come myself, my heart, on the very first day of the troth.
But his eyes were still troubled, and she raised a hand to brush the shadows away. He caught it and placed a kiss tenderly in her palm, then closed her fingers over it.
Do you trust me, lass?
He asked softly. Trust. Such a fragile, tenuous, exquisitely precious thing. The hawk watched her, the emotions flashing across her expressive face, wonderfully open to him now. He knew she was thinking of those black times of which she'd never spoken. One day, she would confide in him all her most private thoughts and fears,
and she would come to understand that no matter what had happened in her past, it could never change his feelings for her. Adrian gazed lovingly at the man who'd taught her how to trust again, the man she'd lost her heart to hopelessly and helplessly, this man who liberally dripped honor, valor, compassion, and chivalry. Neither her past nor his had any relevance to love such as theirs.
"Trust you, Shahok, with all my heart, and further then."
His smile was blinding.
"Adrienne."
"My lord."
Her voice was soft and warm and carefree as a girl's. When he took her in his arms, she shivered with desire.
"My lord."
Adrian didn't see that above her head his eyes grew dark. How was he going to protect her? How could he assure her safety? How quickly could he get to Adam and find what was going on? Because no matter what winding corridors his mind wandered trying to unravel the strange happenings that involved his wife, they all seemed to come circling back to a grinding halt directly in front of that damned smithy. And it wasn't mere jealousy, although the hawk would readily admit to an abiding dislike for the man. It wasn't the Black Queen that had brought Adrian to him, or so cruelly ripped her from him. That was a fact. So what was it? Someone or something else had that power. The power to destroy the Laird of Dalkeith with one blow, by taking his cherished wife away from him. What game, what terrible twisted amusement was being played out upon Dalkeith's shore? What power had taken an interest, and why?
"I came here to hate you, Hawk, but I did not come here to hate the woman you claim as wife."
Adam's words echoed in his mind, and he began to see just the vague outline of a carefully plotted revenge. But that would mean Adam Black had powers the Hawk had never quite believed existed. Bits and pieces of Rome's stories he'd heard as a lad resurfaced in his whirring mind, raising questions and doubts. Stories about druids and Picts, and I, even the nefarious and mischievous fairy. Lydia had always said that any legend was based in some part on fact, the mythical elements being merely the inexplicable, but not necessarily untrue. Oh, his love was testing the limits of his belief in the natural world and blowing them wide open. But if he conceded belief in such magic as time travel, what magic could he discard as too outrageous? None. He could discard no possibility, however unearthly, without thorough consideration. Adam Black had been able to cure the previously incurable poison of Calibron. Adam Black always seemed to know too damned much. Adam Black admitted flatly that he had come to Dalkeith for revenge. The Rome had moved far from the smithy's forge, the Rome who believed the myths and legends. And the Hawk, indebted to Adam for his wife's life, had forced himself to overlook all the oddities, attributing them to his intense dislike of the smithy, convincing himself that he was seeing dragons in the puffy shapes of harmless clouds. He would never let her go, but someone or something else could take her from him at a moment's whim. He would seek it, destroy it, and free her. On his life he vowed it, for there was no life for him without her. Chapter 27. Although the Hawk insisted on leaving early the next morning, he also made sure they took their sweet time on the way back to Dalkeith. He sent half the guards to ride ahead and commanded the other half to stay well behind him and his lady, to allow them privacy. He would return to Uster and oversee the rest of the manorial courts in the future, after this battle was done. Adrian was thrilled by his urgency to return to Dalkeith to seal their vows. She was equally thrilled by the three-day journey, with long dalliances in chilly pools of bubbling spring water, longer interludes of passion on springy moss beneath the canopy of brightly fluttering leaves, moments in which he teased, coaxed, and taught her until the blushing virgin grew confident in her newly discovered womanhood, thrilled to feel a woman's power over her man. She soon became expert in the subtle ways of touching or speaking, of wetting a lip and beckoning with her eyes. She knew the stolen caresses and the instant responses that turned her sweet, beautiful man into a throbbing, hardened savage. She was mildly stunned to discover that Autumn had painted the hills with the inspiration of a master, leaves in brilliant shades of pumpkin, blood wine, and buttery amber rustled crisply beneath the horses' hooves as they rode beneath boughs of harvest gold. Squirrels chirped and skittered through the trees with gravity-defying leaps. Scotland, in all her majestic glory, airbrushed by love, colored the simple gifts of nature into a tapestry of miracles. Adrian had never realized the world was such a wonderful place. She would remember the leisurely return journey to Dalkeith as her honeymoon, a time of phenomenal passion and tender romancing, a time of blissful healing and loving, quite simply, the happiest days of her life. Late on the second day, as they lay on a Douglas tartan of blues and grays, an unaddressed hurt surfaced to poke at Adrian, and she couldn't stay her tongue. Gripping the hawk's face between her hands, she kissed him hard, hot, and tempting, then pulled back and said,
"If you ever forbid me from you again, my husband, I will tear down the walls of Dalkeith, stone by stone, to get to you."
The hawk shook his head, his thoughts completely muddled by the tantalizing kiss, and further bewildered by her words. He claimed her lips in a long, equally fierce kiss, and when she lay panting softly beneath him, he said, "If you ever fail to see how I am faring after being wounded, I will add a stone tower onto Dalkeith and lock you in there, my captive love slave, never to refuse me anything again." It was her turn to study him with a bewildered expression, her lips full and rosy from the heat of his kiss.
"If you mean after you were injured by the arrow, I tried to see you. Grim wouldn't let me."
Hawk's gaze battled with hers.
"Grim said you never came. He said you were sleeping soundly in the peacock room with not a worry in your mind, save how soon I would die and leave you free."
Adrian gasped.
"Never. I was right outside your door, arguing and fighting with him. Still, he swore you refused me entrance."
"I have never refused you entrance. Nay, I opened my very soul and bade you enter. Now you're telling me that you came to see me that night, and Grimm told you I had given orders that you were to be refused?"
Adrian nodded, wide-eyed. Dark fury flitted across the hawk's face as he recalled the agony he'd endured, believing she'd not cared enough to see if he still lived and breathed. Suddenly, he understood his friend's stiff behavior that night, the way Grimm's gaze had not seemed quite steady, the nervous way he'd built up the already blazing fire and had poked aimlessly at the crackling logs.
"Grim, what mischief do you play?" he murmured. Could Grim wish Adrian ill? Or had Grim only been trying to protect him, his friend and brother in arms, from further harm?
Regardless, his actions were unacceptable. No matter how long-standing their friendship, lies were never tolerable. And Grimm's lies had driven a wedge between him and his wife, a wedge that had sent the hawk rushing off to Ooster. What if he hadn't returned for Adrian? How far might Grimm's lies have taken them apart from each other? What might Adam have done to his wife if he hadn't returned for her? The hawk's mouth tightened. Adrian laid her palm against his cheek and said softly,
"Hawk, I don't think he meant any harm. He seemed to be trying to protect you. He said I had brought you nothing but pain, and that it was all his fault."
"His fault?"
"For wishing on a star."
The hawk snorted.
"Wishes on stars don't come true, lass. Any addle-brained bear knows that."
Adrian cocked a mischievous brow at him.
"But he did say he wished for the perfect woman," she preened. "And I do fit the bill," she teased.
"Aye, that you do," the hawk growled.
With a wicked smile, he cupped one of her perfect breasts in his hand and pushed her back upon the tartan as their passion began once again, his last coherent thought before he lost himself in the beauty and wonder that was his wife, was that Grimm owed him some answers, and his wife an apology, and, if he had to admit it, that for all he knew, maybe wishes on falling stars did come true. Stranger things had happened of late. On the last day, Hawk rode as if hell-bent. "Stole 3 days," he mused darkly, holding his wife to his chest in his possessive embrace, his cheek brushing her silky hair. In the woods he had felt safe, that whatever enemy threatened her didn't know where she was at that moment, so he'd prolonged it and spun it out to make it last, keeping his worries away from his wife, wanting nothing to spoil her pleasure. Besides, he kept collapsing into near slumber every time his demanding young wife had her way with him. Damnedest odd thing! He'd never fallen so replete and satisfied to the ground. Oh, but that lass had some serious magic. But now, his mind turned darkly to the matter that lay ahead. Until the Feast of the Blessed Dead, Rushka had warned. The Samhain was tomorrow. The day after the Samhain was the Feast of the Blessed Dead, or All Saints, as some called it. The Samhain was a perilous time for any to be alone. It was rumored that the fairy walked the earth in full glamour on such a night. It was rumored that wickedness abounded on the Samhain, which was why the clans laid the double bonfire of birch, rowan, oak, and pine, and carved deep trenches around it. There they gathered to a one, every man, woman, and child, and feasted together in the protective rim of light. Within that ring, he would pledge his life to his wife and try to make some magic of their own. He could just feel it in his bones that something was about to go very wrong. Samhain. Harvest. For nothing this wide universe I call save thou, my rose. In it thou art my all. Shakespeare. Sonnets 109. Chapter 28. Adam hissed as he left the fairy isle of Morar. Time, usually of no significance to him, had flashed past him, day by precious day. When he played a mortal game, time became a nagging concern. For too long he'd neglected his doings at Dalkeith, but it had taken some time to convince his queen that he was up to no mischief. Now the far-seeing Adam turned his mind toward Dalkeith to study the changes in his game. He stiffened and hissed again. How dare they! When his queen had said the damning words sealing the hawk's fate, Adam had searched far and wide for the perfect tool of revenge. He had wandered through the centuries, listening, watching, and finally choosing the perfect woman with careful precision. Adam was not one to muck in the lives of mortals often, but when he did, legends arose, and Adam liked that. Some called him Puck. A bard would name him Ariel. Still others knew him as Robin Goodfellow. The Scots called him the San Cirque du, the Black Elf. Occasionally Adam donned the visage of a charging and headless horseman, or a grim-faced specter carrying a scythe, just to live long in the memories of mortals. But whatever the glamour chosen, he always won what he set out to win. And he'd been so certain of success this time. The woman had not only grown up in magical New Orleans, she'd sworn off men so vehemently that he'd heard her through the centuries. Adam had watched her for weeks before he'd made his careful choice. He'd studied her, learned everything there was to know about the fascinating Adrienne de Simone. Things even her beloved husband didn't know about her. He had been convinced that she was the one woman guaranteed to hate the legendary hawk. Now, as Adam moved towards Dalkeith upon the sea, his far-reaching vision revealed a blissful Adrienne, wedding plans lazing dreamily in her mind. But the hawk... Ah, the hawk wasn't so comfortable right now. He sensed something was wrong. He would be prepared. Adam had brought Adrienne here to reject the hawk, and of course to claim the beauty for himself. Rarely was such a stirring mortal creature born as that woman. Even the king had commented on her perfection. What sweet revenge to wed the hawk to a woman who would never love him, while Adam made her his own. To cuckold the man who'd humiliated the fairy king. But it seemed that he'd been as wrong about Adrienne as he'd been about the hawk. Underestimated them both, he had. She loved the hawk as intensely as the hawk loved her. Adam drew up short and grinned craftily as inspiration struck. What a tiny revenge that would have been to merely cuckold the hawk. A new and truly devastating possibility now occurred to him. Lydia and Tavis were sitting on the cobbled terrace of Dalkeith when the hawk and Adrienne arrived late that night. Deep in the shadows, talking softly and sipping sweet port, they watched the younger couple ride in, dismount, and link hands as they moved toward the terrace. Lydia's eyes shimmered with happiness as she watched. Adrienne said something that made the hawk laugh. When he pulled her to a lazy halt and kissed her, She tugged the thong free from his hair and flung it into the night. What started as a tender kiss deepened hungrily. Long moments rippled by as the kiss unfurled, lingering and savage and hot, the Laird of Dalkeith upon the sea and his lady kissed. Beneath an almost full moon on the lawn directly in front of the terrace, they kissed. And kissed. Lydia's smile faded, and she shuffled in her chair uncomfortably. She forced herself to draw a deep, difficult breath, and willed her heart to stop that ridiculous thundering. She'd thought her body might have finally forgotten such passion. Little chance of that.
"Well, that's quite a kiss, I'll say."
Tavis's rich brogue rolled over her.
"Quite a kiss."
Lydia swallowed. How long had it been since a man had kissed her that way? Tavis moved imperceptibly closer, and Lydia glanced sharply at him. Then her gaze turned speculative. Tavis McTarvet was one fine figure of a man, she noted. How did it come to pass that she had failed to see that before now? And why that secretive smile on his face, she wondered.
"What are you smiling about?"
she snapped.
"'Tis a fine night on Dalkeith, I'll say," he offered benignly. "They've come home, and it looks to me like we'll be having wee bairns around here soon. I'll see that again."
"Humph!"
Lydia snorted.
"Have you figured out how to make coffee yet, old man? I'd love to have a good cup for her in the morning."
"M'lady,"
his gentle gaze chided her.
"I'm a man of talented hands, remember. Of course I can make coffee."
Talented hands. The words lingered in her mind a moment longer than she would have liked, and she stole a surreptitious peek at those hands. Good hands they were, indeed. Broad and strong, with long, clever fingers. Able. They tanned soft hides and tenderly pruned young roses. They brushed her hair gently, and made tea. What other pleasures might those hands be capable of lavishing upon a woman? She wondered.
"Och, Lydia, you've been wasting many fine years, haven't you, lass?"
The true voice of her heart, silent all these years, finally found its tongue. Lydia subtly shifted closer to Tavis, so that their arms rested lightly side by side. It was a soft touch, but it was meant to tell him many things, and it did. Deeper in the night, when Tavis McTarvet laid one aging yet still strong and capable hand atop hers, Lydia of Dalkeith pretended not to notice. But she curled her fingers tightly around his, just the same. It was early in the morning, the time when the cool moon briefly rides in tandem with the sun, that Adrian felt the hawk slip from the hand-hewn bed in the peacock room. She shivered in the fleeting coolness before the covers draped snugly to her body again. The spicy scent of him clung to the blankets, and she buried her nose in it. When they'd ridden in last night, the hawk had swept her into his arms and vaulted the stairs three at a time, carrying his blushing wife past gaping servants. He'd called for a steaming bath to be delivered to the Laird's bedroom, and they had bathed in scented, sensuous oil that clung to their bodies. He'd made fierce and possessive love to her on a mound of tangled throes before the fire, and oiled by the fragrant blend, their bodies had slipped and slid with exquisite friction. Adrian had been claimed and branded by the man's hand, conquered and ravished and utterly devoured. She had willingly dismissed all conscious thought, become an animal to mate with her wild black charger. When he carried her to the bed, she'd run her hands over his body, over his face in the sweet afterglow, memorizing every plane and angle, and secreting that memory away in her hands. But somehow, between the magnificent lovemaking and the sleeping, a silence had fallen between the lovers. It lay there, a stranger's gauntlet downflung in their bed. She had felt it grow into a fist of silence as she'd gotten lost in fears over which she had no control. Desperately, she'd threaded her fingers through the hawks. Perhaps, if she held on to him tightly enough, if she was tossed back to the future, she might take him with her. She had spent many stiff hours pretending to sleep, afraid to sleep. And just now, as he slipped from the bed, she felt the fear returning. But she couldn't hold his hand every minute of every day. She rolled silently onto her side, peeped out from the pile of covers, and marveled. He stood at the arched window, his head cocked as if listening to the breaking morn and hearing secrets in the cries of the wakening gulls. His hands were splayed on the stone ledge of the opening, the last rays of moonbeam caressing his body with molten silver. His eyes were dark pools of shadow as he gazed into the dawn. His stern profile might have been chiseled of the same stone used to build Dalkeith upon the sea. She closed her eyes when he reached for his kilt. The silence unfisted and wrapped its fingers around her heart as he left the peacock room. Hawk stood in the doorway on the second floor, his eyes dark with rage. Rage at his own helplessness. Bringing her back to Dalkeith had been a mistake. A big mistake, he knew it. The very air inside Dalkeith seemed charged, as if someone had sloshed lamp oil all over the castle, and now lay in wait, ready to drop a lit candle and step back to watch their lives be devoured by the ensuing inferno. No question remained in his mind. Dalkeith was not safe for her. But she disappeared in Ooster, too. Then they'd just have to go further away. China, perhaps. Or Africa. At least get the hell out of Scotland. Damn it all. Dalkeith was his place. Their place. Dalkeith upon the sea had been his entire life. He'd endured so much to have this time. To come home. To watch their sons play at the cliff's edge. To watch their daughters race through the gardens, little feet pattering across mosses and cobbled walkways. On a warm day, to bathe their children in a clear blue loch. On a balmy summer night, to seduce his wife in the fountain beneath shimmering stars. He deserved to spend the remainder of his years walking with Adrian over these hills and vales, watching the sea and the seasons' eternal march across the land, building a home rich with love and memories and adventures. Every bit of it. Damn it! He was a selfish man. He wanted the whole dream. Should have stayed away, Hawk. And you know it. What made you think you could fight something you can't even name? He closed his eyes tightly and swayed in the dark. Give up Dalkeith for her? His head fell forward, bowed beneath the weight of crushing decisions. A sigh to extinguish bonfires shuddered through his body. Aye. He would wed her at the Samhain. Then he would take her as far away from here as they had to go. He'd already started to say his goodbyes in a strained silence. Goodbyes took some time, and there was much he needed to bid farewell at Dalkeith upon the sea. To risk staying where whatever forces commanded his wife, patently impossible. "We can't stay," he told the silent waiting room, the one room he needed to bid farewell most strongly. His nursery. Running is the only intelligent thing to do in this case. 'Tis the only sure way to keep her safe. He rubbed his eyes and leaned an arm against the door jamb, struggling to tame the emotions coursing through him. He was captivated, bound beyond belief to the lass sleeping innocently in his bed. This night shared with her had been all he'd ever dreamed he might one day know. The incredible intimacy of making love to a woman whose very thoughts he could read. It wasn't just making love. Tonight, when their bodies had melded together in passion, he felt such complete kindred that it knocked him off balance. If nothing else, it shifted and tumbled his priorities into perfect position. She comes first. Hawk's jaw tensed, and he cursed softly. His eyes wandered lovingly over the cradles, the carved toys, the soft woolens, and the high windows opening to a velvet dawn. He could give her a babe. Hell, she might carry his already. And someone or something could rip her and the babe right out of his arms and his life. It would destroy him. Dalkeith would prosper without him. Adrian would make a fine laird. Lydia would summon him home from France. Elise would keep his mother company, and Adrian would wed and bring babies to this nursery. He would suffer no regrets. He could have babies with Adrian in a crofter's hut, and be just as happy. The hawk stood a few moments more, until the flicker of a smile curved his lip. He closed the door on his old dream with a gentle smile and a kind of reverence only a man in love fully understands. A room had never been his dream at all. She was his dream.
Hawk!
Lydia's lower lip trembled an unspoken protest. She averted her gaze to study an intricate twining of roses.
It must be done, Mother. "'Tis the only way I can be certain she's safe.'
Lydia busied her hands with the careful pinching away of dried leaves, pruning her roses as she'd pruned them for 30 years.
"'But to leave? Tonight?'
"'We can't risk staying, Mother. There's no other choice I can make.'
"'But Adrian isn't even here,'
she protested.
"'You can't relinquish the title if no one's here to claim it.'
"'Mother!'
Hawk didn't bother to point out to her how absurd that protest was. From the sheepish look on her face, it was obvious she knew she was grasping at any excuse she could find.
"'You're talking about taking my grandbabies away!'
Lydia squinted hard against tears. Hawk regarded her with a mixture of deep love and amused patience.
"'They're grandbabies you don't even have yet, and ones we won't get a chance to make if I lose her.' To whatever it is that controls her.
You could take her far from these shores and still lose her, Hawk. Until we discover what controls her, she won't ever really be safe.
Lydia argued stubbornly.
She and I had planned to investigate the details of each time she traveled, to discover similarities. Have you done that?
Hawk shook his head. His gaze shuddered.
Not yet. Truth be told, I've been loath to bring it up. She doesn't. I keep my silence. Once we've wed and left, there will be time to speak of it.
Hawk, perhaps the Rome.
Hawk shook his head impatiently. He'd already tried that tactic this morning. It had been his last-ditch chance. He'd found Rushka up on the southwest ridge with his people, digging the trenches and gathering the 7 woods for the fires. But Rushka had flatly refused to discuss his wife in any capacity, nor had the Hawk been able to lure him into a conversation about the smithy. Damned irritating that he couldn't even force answers from those who depended upon him for his hospitality. But the Rome, well, the Rome truly depended upon no man's hospitality. When things became difficult, they moved on to a better place. Absolute freedom, that. Nor had the Hawk, for that matter, been able to find the damn smithy.
Mother, where's Adam?
The smithy?
Lydia asked blankly.
Aye, the forge was cold. His wagon's gone.
Fair to tell. I haven't seen him since... Let's see. Probably since the two of you left for Ooster. Why, Hawk? Do you think he has something to do with Adrian?
Hawk nodded slowly. Lydia attacked from another angle.
We'll see. If you take Adrian away, and Adam does have something to do with it... He can just follow you. Better to stay here and fight.
She gasped when the Hawk turned his dark gaze toward her.
Mother, I will not risk losing her. I'm sorry that doesn't please you. But without her... Oh, without her...
He lapsed into a brooding stillness.
Without her what?
Lydia asked faintly. The Hawk just shook his head and walked away. Adrian walked slowly through the bailey looking for the Hawk. She hadn't seen him since he'd left their bed early that morning. Although she knew she'd be standing beside him soon, pledging her vows, she couldn't shake the feeling that something was about to go wrong. She approached the mossy stones of the Broch. Looking at it reminded her of the day Hawk had given her the first lesson in how a falcon was tamed. How deliciously a falcon was tamed. She opened the door and peered inside. A faint smile curving her lip. How frightened and fascinated she'd been by the Hawk that day. How tempted and hopeful, yet unable to trust. Was that the flutter of wings she heard? She squinted into the gloom, then stepped in. A part of her wasn't surprised at all when the door closed swiftly behind her. As she was plunged into darkness, she had an abrupt flash of understanding. This was the danger she had so feared, whatever or whoever. Was behind her. Adrian felt as if she'd been balancing on the edge of a razor since last night, waiting for something bad to happen. Now she understood perfectly what had kept her awake all night. It had been her instincts again, warning her of impending doom, clamoring that it was just